Welcome back, friends, to the Waitlist Space with Lindsay.
And Rob.
And today's special guests, Michelle.
And Joe.
We couldn't get enough of them.
Yay!
This is part two. Well, we had so much to say last time. So this time we're talking about our spiritual trauma. Spiritual trauma.
Spiritual trauma.
We're discussing our spiritual trauma. Somewhere along the way, when Robert and I were on our journey, I read something about recontextualization and how you can have a difficult or traumatic experience. And part of working through that is to recontextualize it. I'll tell you a little bit about what that means and what that doesn't mean. What that means is you take your experiences, you try to derive some growth opportunities, some positives from them. You try to see how you've developed since experiencing those difficult things. What it does not mean is denying that you've had a difficult experience, erasing your difficult experience, or lying to yourself about what it actually was. So I just want to say that up front. Recontextualization is about processing through something, not covering it up, not erasing it.
Got it.
I actually think that you and I were talking one night and I was talking to you about not understanding what to do with some of my feelings. And then you shared with me what you just shared, basically. A lot of times you'll say things that either are over my head or they don't land and they don't stick. But that one stuck. And I wrote it down. I have a little book here that is my spiritual book that I write down things in that are spiritually centered. And I wrote down those questions. And okay. I have been thinking about them for probably months at this point. And I thought it would be really interesting to hear other people also kind of frame some of the stuff up.
Yeah. So I would love for you, Robert, to read the questions and then tell us your answers as you go through them. And I'd love to hear everybody's point. If you guys have answers to these questions, I would absolutely love to hear the differences, and then maybe we can talk about it.
Yeah. So you will...
But this is specifically about spiritual trauma, the spiritual trauma of working in a megachurch, because the recontextualization can be applied to any trauma, and tonight we're just focusing on that particular one.
Right. And I think for Joe, Joe's going to have a perspective that is an active participant as someone who is also associated with this. So obviously Joe was not employed by a megachurch, but was directly connected to and affected by it.
Yeah, I think that while some of us were employed, I actually think it's a really valuable perspective, the not employed, but watching, you know, how it impacts you personally, your family, your loved ones. So I think that's a great perspective to add. Did you want to go first, Robert? You have your book ready.
I do have my book ready. Here's the questions that you said to me. You rattled it off to me like as if it was normal. And I
had just read it in school.
So I was so impressed.
I was studying it in school, so yeah.
So you said, without taking away what I experienced, how have I, ... and then there's a series of questions. So without taking away what I've experienced, and what I'd like to do first is actually enumerate what I experienced.
Okay.
So I think for me to answer those other things, I got to be able to say, hey, this is what I experienced. And I wrote a short list, and I actually did it through the lens of emotions because that's the thing I tend to not
focus on.
Yeah. So instead of like the action that I that happened or whatever, I wanted to be able to say a feeling.
Good.
And so these are a list of feelings.
That's okay. Great. Yeah.
I experienced a sense of betrayal. I experienced fear. I experienced grief. I experienced lies. It's not really a feeling.
That's not an emotion, but we'll skip that one.
And what's funny is I thought that and I clarified it. I felt disappointment.
Okay, yeah, that's a good emotion.
See what I did?
I like it.
Lies. Oh, that's not an emotion. I literally, when I wrote it down, was like, I gotta change it. confusion, and personal chaos.
Okay.
That's what I experienced. Now, I think there's more, or I could probably dial in on those, but from a generic standpoint, the spiritual trauma that I experience are centered on those feelings and statements.
So this exercise is focused on, without taking away from that,
right,
without denying that, how have you grown, developed new thoughts, learned to love yourself and others better, developed new freedoms and practices that serve you better.
Mm-hmm. Do you all want to share what we experienced first and then go through each, go like round robin?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Okay, good. Joe, what did you experience?
I didn't think I'd be met, Joe's eyes.
You guys should see Joe's eyes. He was not ready for the clockwise motion.
He was not ready for the clockwise rotation of that.
I think disappointment definitely comes to the surface. Disappointment in the sense that even though I was not employed by said megachurch, I did volunteer, and I found that very rewarding. And the disappointment comes in the fact that I put a lot of effort and a lot of heart, obviously, into volunteering. And when I saw the slow demise of that relationship with the megachurch by way of Michelle's employment and friends that had left as well, that disappointment came to the surface. I mean, more than anything, there was a little bit maybe of I felt a bit of anger, mostly towards the way that Michelle's treated. Again, my perspective was outside looking in, and that's really my take on it.
Michelle, how did you feel? What was your experience?
I think for a long time, there was deep sadness. Mm. And when I started to dig in deeper, it was grief. It was loss. It was the loss of so much. I felt I possibly wasted all this time.
Oh, that's a big one.
And for what? But sadness was a huge, huge piece of that. Disappointment, just feeling totally betrayed. Mm. And the feelings that came around that. And I would say that I went into a depression for a little while because of it.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that I did not write down sad, anger, or
depressed.
Regret.
Regret?
Because all of those are 100% true.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you were saying that, and I was like, yes. All of the above, for sure.
How about you, wifey creature?
I think, yes, I agree to all those emotions. I also experienced a kind of identity that was, it felt like the walls were closing in on who I was. Like I was getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And as this mega church was devolving, their demands were getting greater and greater and greater, and it was more and more pressure. And that pressure really affected my self-value and how I saw myself. And I became very discouraged. Like everything that I was doing wasn't enough. Like the purpose that I had been pouring my soul out for was a lie.
Yeah.
That kind of to echo what Michelle said, like, have I been wasting my time? That like, man, I've been really putting all this investment into a place and it's a black hole. There's nothing coming out of it. And as this mega church devolved, I feel like the ugliness came out more, and like the way the staff was treated and the way the congregation was spoken to, like children and not like intelligent adults, and that those kind of behaviors really made me internalize that. So I really took it as I wasn't doing enough. I wasn't good enough. I wasn't working hard enough. I wasn't faithful enough. And that, really, as I said in an earlier podcast, the reason why I left is because I started to believe it.
As your partner in life, as your spouse, as your husband,
yeah,
hearing those words, yeah, are gut punches to me.
Sure. So depression, totally, Michelle. Like,
yeah,
when you feel like you're never doing enough, and yeah, that's a terrible place to be in.
But you're also going back to the word family.
Yeah.
Right? So, not to speak too much of my background, but, you know, I come from a dysfunctional family.
Yeah.
And then here I was put, I chose to be in working in this, you know, environment, and they say, we're family.
You're like, oh shit.
Well, and yeah, you know, and then the same type of, you
wait,
know.
Wait, did that make you more tolerant of dysfunction, you think?
No.
More hyper against,
yes,
ah.
Absolutely. It was disturbing to me, and it was super hurtful. Mm. Because as Lindsay's talking and she's describing what's going on, I'm envisioning like even staff people going after each other.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I saw it, I experienced it, and it was horrible. Mm. Let alone anybody treat, you know, in any environment, you treat anybody in those ways. But then here you're in an environment where they're standing on the foundations, you know, of the Bible, of God. We're in ministry, we're working together, we're family, we love each other, and it is the most dysfunctional thing you've ever seen. And you're like, what is going on?
It's kind of like real family.
Exactly.
Like, okay, it's interesting you say that, because since then, and it's been, you know, like you said, 5 years, a little over 5 years for me.
Can't believe it.
I know. Since then, I've been really careful not to get involved with any employer who says we're like family, because, hey, guess what? Traditionally, families hurt each other because they're close and they can. And I don't want it, I don't want that in my workplace. I don't want that,
yeah,
as.
Let's be professionals.
Let's just be professional.
Let's just be professionals.
I like that.
Let's leave the family a family.
I'll do my job, you do yours.
Thank you, Gen Z.
Yeah, exactly.
We do.
Amen, Gen Z. Bring it.
We love our kids. Well, all right. So, I mean, I can say that I relate with everybody's written down experience. You know, even there's a little nuance. I relate with all of them. There's so much there.
I would agree, yeah.
Robert, how have you grown? We're going to go round robin. We're just going to do this. How have you grown?
Grown.
You want to do one at a time, or you want to do all of them?
No, I want to go round robin. That's
okay,
fine.
Round robin. Okay, how have you grown since then?
I don't know how to answer this question.
You don't know how to answer it, or you do know how to answer it?
I don't know how to answer how have I grown.
Do you want to skip and pass to someone else?
No. Stop.
Don't tell me what to do.
Don't tell me what to do.
You don't know how I like my coffee.
You don't know how I like my cereal.
Mysterious.
It's such an open-ended word.
Yeah.
So where have I seen my own personal growth as it relates to what I've experienced? One, I think being honest with myself in that, honest so much so that I've really questioned who I am. Mm. And to me, that's growth. I've not shied away. Now, I got to explain this a little bit. I've not shied away from what I really think or feel or what I'm contemplating. Now, I did for a while with you, Lindsay, because I was very afraid to come to you and say, I have these thoughts and feelings and they're in question, and our relationship and our marriage was built upon this understanding of a view of God, and that is changing for me, and I'm desperately afraid of losing you. And my own growth was to be honest enough with myself to say it and to trust you enough with that information, and you loved me in spite of it and have accepted me, and I have felt great growth because of it, and safety and the ability to explore who I am honestly without self-censorship is probably my biggest area of growth.
Well, I'm glad you shared it with me. And
Joe, how about you?
Okay. Okay. Getting crazy. More chocolate.
Wow.
I would say, yeah, growth. awareness, for sure. Awareness of myself and within my surroundings. And what I mean by that is awareness of how I fit into a certain community, a certain group, because I was always very isolated in a lot of ways. I'm an only child, and where I grew up and Chicago and everything, I was always kind of just isolated in many ways, but I grew more accustomed to being within a community. And that takes awareness of how you fit within it. Also tolerance, because hence when you share that time with others, you become more tolerant of the differences, also tolerant of how they, maybe they see you, and you realize that, well, I also see them differently, but I have to accept that, and I have to accept those individuals with those differences and what they bring to the table. So it goes, the awareness and tolerance to me, for me, they go hand in hand.
That's beautiful growth.
Yeah.
Michelle, what about you?
Talk about beautiful.
Wait, I want to ask Joe something. Can I ask Joe something?
Yeah, sure.
Oh.
You know, funny you mentioned that. I feel less tolerant.
That's not a question.
Here's my question.
That is not a question. Right. That's a statement.
How did you grow in your tolerance? Like, how did you, was that conscious? Do you think you spent time like trying, you just mentally push through, I got to be more tolerant?
I think that can segue into like another episode, honestly. You're going to have to at least ask me back here.
When I often, as I'm going to put Michelle on the spot here, I say to Michelle quite a bit that you've saved my life. And what I mean by that is that she has allowed me to grow as a person, but also allowed me to see who I truly am in the mirror with all that ugliness. She's exposed me, as I mentioned, to certain ways of being together in a community and with others, things that I did not grow up with. So that tolerance, I think, came along with that. I don't think I would be as tolerant if I never met Michelle. I think eventually I probably would have found it, but not in a way that I did. So really, she has helped me quite a bit in that.
So it's Lindsay's fault, is what I'm hearing.
Absolutely.
Why I'm not. I'm just kidding.
Sure.
Wow. That's fine. You can blame me.
She's under that bus.
I think this might turn into a therapy session.
Nah.
Just kidding.
No, that's good. That's
good stuff.
How about you, Michelle? How have you grown?
I'm still a work in progress. I'm growing, but I definitely, I have a hard time answering this. I think that having the space to be able to really explore anything, right, has allowed me to like open my heart and open my mind to things that I probably wouldn't have entertained. I mean, deep down inside, if you really know me, you know I'm a little bit of a rebel, but I think it goes even more deeper than that in just allowing myself to see the possibilities of doing different things. And I've always tried to see people for who they are. So for me, that's nothing new to me, as far as, you know, accepting. That's, I believe that's my DNA. I'm open door, please. You know, the worst thing is for someone to feel like they're not accepted, that they're not loved, and that's heartbreaking to me.
Yeah. And I think I can, for myself personally and my journey, I definitely have experienced a freedom and a growth in freedom. I've also experienced, so that's like external, like what I'm pursuing, what I'm thinking, you know. But internally, I've also given myself permission to be outside the box, to be outside the parameters.
Mm. Yes.
To, you know, not fit to other people's ideals of what I should be. And I think that's my growth spot, is really rediscovering myself and...
Rebel man.
Yeah. Well, and some of the... I don't think that a lot of people... We have such a desire to belong and such a need to belong that I think people in any kind of community, whether it's faith-based or not, you do make contingencies in order to belong. And
absolutely.
In our situation, the requirements got stricter and stricter and stricter, right, as we went along. Pretty soon, you're not connected with yourself anymore. You're not aware of, what do I actually want? Is this what I'm being told I want, or is this actually what I want to do?
You are conforming to the ideal mold that somebody else has made, and you're losing yourself by becoming that form that they've made for you.
Those lines blur.
Yeah. They do.
They definitely blur.
And for me, like, rolling into the next question, how have I developed new thoughts? I have, in part of my rediscovering myself, I have begun to consciously think about myself as good. Mm. Whenever I'm feeling like I'm not doing enough, in that period after leaving the mega church, I had a lot of space, as we all have. COVID kind of created that a little bit for everyone. And in that space, I very distinctly and strongly resisted the urge to fill it with things to preoccupy myself. And I also intentionally, anytime I felt guilty, and it was guilt, for not doing enough, not producing enough, coming from this high productive environment, I would tell myself, what I'm producing right now is self-healing, and this is exactly what I need.
Wow.
And I think that as we're sharing our stories, that's what I hear everybody's kind of working on. Like, hey, I had this space. I'm trying to redefine who I am in it, and I'm trying to heal. And
some of us had to go to Spain to do it.
It's okay.
Some of us would like to go to Ireland.
They're very rebellious. They go far, far away. But it's interesting, because space is uncomfortable. It's not a place where you're not running to a comfort. It's, you know, there's a lot of space in there. There's a lot of time to think. There's a lot of emotions to walk through. And acknowledging that whenever I'm feeling hard on myself, that I'm actually good. I'm doing good. I'm in a good place. This is hard, and I'm doing good because I'm walking through it. Mm. That was a big deal for me. Just in my internal dialogue, I mean. Aside from seeking, you know, out external theologies or philosophies or perspectives, just internally, like, the pure basics, all the way back to square one, like, hey, it's okay for me not to, I am enough, you know. All the demands that have been put on me, I'm enough. Mm-hmm.
Can you make that a recording so I can say it to
we
myself?
We just did. We just did, friends.
We're actually recording this right now.
You can listen to it as much as you want.
Because I need to think that more. And it's so well put. Thank you. Very well put.
Oh, what new thoughts did you guys develop along the way?
Joe.
Hi.
I love his face.
So I could tell you're thinking. I can see your mind going.
Let me reiterate the question. How have you developed new thoughts?
Again, I have to base it around an awakening. A lot of individuals have spiritual awakenings and have awakenings based on experiences that they've had that were like just pivotal in their life. I would say the thoughts more are about an awakening of how I fit into a non-specific mold. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of what I was going through was trying to frame myself within a certain box. And I hate to put it that way, but when you're in an organized religion, you have parameters and you have certain walls that you try to fit yourself into. And I feel that I had an awakening that I do not need to fit myself within a box. Mm. And the thoughts that came from that were that there's nothing wrong with me just because I don't fit within a certain parameter. I guess that was part of that awakening. And the thoughts were all more of a stream of positive thoughts that came from that. Mm. And it allowed me to be able to seek and not feel guilty about seeking.
Mm. Mm, that's good stuff. Wow.
Well, got through that. So.
I give you an A- on that answer.
Oh my gosh. Can you leave the judge at home, please?
Okay, I'm sorry.
You're going last, Michelle.
New thoughts. It's taken me a while to get... I would say that I'm just starting to do that because I feel like...
C-. And, no, I'm just kidding.
It happens. It happens. Okay. I'm usually more on the other end, F, but I'll take the C.
But we'll have a bell curve at the end.
It just takes a long time for me to process. And there's a lot of negative self-talk that was happening. And so I had to get to the point where I can tell myself, it's okay. It's okay to do nothing. Yeah. It's okay to, you know, sit there and think for several hours about a certain topic and to really allow yourself that space. So I think the new things is being able to just explore different ideas. What does God mean to me? How does it fit in my life? These are all the new type of thoughts that I'm having right now that I'm grappling with.
That's good. Who is God? What does he mean to you? Thinking about that outside of the confines of the religious organization.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah. I think it's okay to do nothing is a new thought.
For you?
For me, to hear it like...
Yeah.
Today is a new thought.
No. I'm saying as part of this process.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
Is there any more new thoughts that you've developed since your spiritual trauma?
Is it my turn to talk?
It's your turn.
Are you going to grade me?
Yes.
Am I the teacher's pet?
No.
That's for another podcast.
Oh, Lord.
We had to know it was going to go downhill at some point.
We're not recording that.
You're going to laugh so much when you edit this.
I know I am.
He's going to leave some of it in.
Yes,
you're
going to
be
am.
Like, no. Why?
The new thoughts, I think, along the lines of it's okay to do nothing is where do I get my value from?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody has mentioned it in different forms, but reassessing who you are and how you have your own value is a thing for me. That's a new thought because, you know, we've been told, I've read a bunch of old church fathers that say, you know, we're born into the world as sinners and damned to hell if nothing changes, and thank God we've been exposed to Jesus, therefore we're saved. And the new thought for me is part of this deconstruction process is to say, actually, I just don't know that is, you know, what God really wants us to think about. You know, I think maybe, you know, if God is real and God made us, and if God made us in their image, then what if I'm good, actually? That's a new thought. You know, we talked about that one time and how that gave me pause to think about it. It's okay to not do anything because my value does not come from the sum of that which I produce as it relates to labor, you know, in a culture that really leverages the work of many for the benefit of the few.
Yeah.
Labor is the commodity, and I am worth something in spite of not having a labor output.
And I think that is kind of an American, well, not only American, but it's very prevalent in America to have a production-based identity. And I know, if you don't mind me putting you on the spot, Joe and Michelle, I know when you were overseas, you experienced something very different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Joe, when your workmates were not the same as American workmates.
Yeah, the dynamics were different. I wouldn't say that it was, I did not experience that that mythical work-life balance was so radically different. But I did experience that there was a major respect towards somebody's personal life. When you're off, you're off. When you're having a PTO or you have vacation, nobody even tries to contact you.
What?
Yeah, for sure.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's... When you're not working, you're definitely not working, and it's not even expected for
you. They respect your time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
They respect me. Your family time.
Yeah, working evenings is a rarity. I mean, it's not even expected that you work beyond the...
Normal hours.
The normal hours. I mean, there is an amount of sacrifice, you know. But it's up to you. It's up to you how far you want to push it. It's not expected of you. So that is a big change.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I know Robert had bosses say, if you're not working 65 hours a week, you're not working enough.
That's insane.
And literally in a 40-hour a week job.
Wow.
Yeah. But that's kind of the expectation, right? Is that you're always on.
Right.
Always available.
Yeah, so that's new to me. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like having my value actually be intrinsic to me and not as an output of what I do is a new concept that's incredibly difficult for me to embrace.
So let me ask, we've all kind of touched on like how we've recontextualized looking at ourselves. How have we learned to love others better since going through this really difficult period, this really difficult experience of leaving institutionalized church? Like, has that affected anyone's ability to love others better? I mean, can we love others better?
I'll start. The whole breakdown that I had experiencing my own relationship to the evangelical church was so that I could love other people better.
Okay, tell me more.
Because the evangelical church became a hindrance to do that.
For example?
My perspective is that the evangelical church requires an us versus them, you know, a line in the sand. We belong on this side. We're in the church and you guys are not out of the church. And we're gonna cross that line. We're gonna recruit you. We're gonna convert you. We're gonna bring you across back to the line. But there's always a line in the sand.
I see.
And if you participate by the rules we set forth, we'll include you and you're on our side. And there are always, that's always that dance between that line that exists, that's the us versus them mentality. Mm-hmm. And I found that leaving the evangelical church, I could actually love more kinds of people easier, more frequently, fuller, you know,
freer,
without the hindrance of, and I hate to name it like this, but obviously it's LGBT, queer folk, it's just people that aren't like, that are different than you. You know, being able to accept them and love them, truly love them and accept them. Not like, hey, come to my church and sit in the pew because that's all you can do. You don't, you know, you can't sign up and deliver handouts because that would be volunteering. And volunteering is a position of power and prestige. And if you have power and prestige, you have potential leadership. But you can't be, you know, gay and a leader at the same time. So just go sit back in the pew. We'll love you from over there while we do really important work like, you know, hand things out or whatnot. Obviously, I'm being facetious, but that's what it felt like at the end. Was
sure.
It literally felt like I was being stifled to love others well.
Interesting.
And so it wasn't because I left the church. I guess it is.
I love that for you.
But it was literally the reason why I left, part of it.
Amazing. I think that it's given me more empathy for outsiders. I've tried to be inclusive, in even in a position where I felt handcuffed not to be, I found my ways.
Yeah.
Around that, because people over principle just always was my thought, that I'm going to look at that person and love them where they're at and accept them fully. But being put off, cast out, kicked out, whatever, however that looks, way it feels, right? Because there's this huge loss of community, huge loss of, you're literally cut off from, you know, you had hundreds of people that, you know, you hung out with, you saw day-to-day basis, week in, week out, you have maintained all these relationships, and then it's like you're cut off. And so I did feel like an outsider. I did feel like misplaced and was kind of wandering. And so having more empathy for people that have been truly, truly displaced has kind of been in the forefront of my mind. I think piggybacking on that as well is going into another country and being, you know, an expat, and even feeling that as well. Because even though we come from Latin backgrounds, we're not from Spain. And so, you know, they know that.
There's a difference.
There is a difference. There's an aspect of that, you know, that I experienced. And so just having that mind, like, in the forefront of my mind. So I don't have a lot of tolerance for people who are closed-minded right now.
Isn't that tragic, though? I mean, if you take a step back and you look at the essence of what a Christian faith should be, like you look at the morals that are communicated, isn't it kind of tragic that you would have to step away from that?
Yes.
To be able to, or to feel the freedom to embrace, you know, those people that are cast off, and even recognizing there's a whole group of people that are not included because of one thing or another.
Literally, the grand irony is that Jesus was the person that hung out with those folks.
I know. Well, they hackled him for it, too.
That's true.
I mean, for a long time, I felt like I am in this position to be that person.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to, like, show Christ in this way of loving people well and really trying to, like, be open and honest. And I don't know how I feel about that now.
Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're okay. They're allowed out here in the open, weightless space.
Weightless.
What about you, Joe? Have you grown in your ability to love others?
Yeah, so it, I think...
Let me just say, Joe doesn't struggle in this way.
With loving others? That's beautiful.
No. I it really is. It is a beautiful thing.
I can see it.
Yes.
Tell me more.
I just want to say that, like, he has taught me to see people with no barriers. Like, throughout our marriage, throughout the years, like, he's really taught me to see people for who they are. And in a way, I feel a lot of guilt, because I feel like I may have steered him in a way of thinking down this path.
And you definitely have. He told me about it.
No, I'm pointing at my husband because he says he feels guilty for steering me down a narrow-minded path as well.
Right. I do feel it's that difficult. Way because he sees people in such a beautiful way.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
I mean...
No, I'll have to agree with you 100% on that.
I can see it as true.
So, I was exposed to a very large, again, we're talking
diverse.
Community. It was very diverse, yes, from a very young age. Whether it was because I lived in other countries or just the fact that we had many people that we knew that came from different, from various backgrounds, and we just accepted them for who they are at face value. That can be good and bad, but I think that also lends itself to you. If you accept someone for who they are and they turn out not to be that, that's not on you, it's on them. And that is also another lesson learned. So those lessons stack over the years. What Robert said was very interesting because he spoke about a line in the sand. I think, and that goes back to the awareness that I've that's really grown in me, where I'm aware of where I stand regarding that line in the sand. And I can now, because of that, tolerate even better and know how to love somebody for who they are, but also for who they're not. That doesn't mean that somebody that doesn't deserve my friendship because of who I feel they are, and that I don't agree with the way they treat others or the way they see the world, that's on them. And I'm not going to persecute them or judge them, because then I'm being a hypocrite, because that is not how I see that we should treat each other. I think awareness, again, comes back to that. I know where I'm at with that line in the sand. I know where I stand. And if others are going to accept me for that, that's fine. If they're not, then again, it's no love lost. And I'm still going to accept them for who they are, but I know now where my friendship and where my respect stands with them.
Mm-hmm. He's so good at that, too. I'm like... hoping
the diplomat.
That rubs off on me a little bit. I mean, I have to say, though, that when I will constantly allow someone to come back and, you know, give them second chances, there's that line for Joe. There's that line.
One of my favorite Joe-isms.
Joe-isms.
That I've learned over the years is, you've seen that movie, you know how it ends.
Yes.
And I love that. It's such a brilliant statement that you've said that sticks, because it's so easy to apply to someone, namely our children, when they're like telling us this thing, you're like, oh yeah, you've actually seen this movie before, you know how it ends. And then they're like, yeah, you know, you're right, you know. That's a good one.
Joe has so many of those good ones.
I think for me, the growth in loving others has really come from an understanding as to what motivates people to get into institutional religion in the first place. And that I think there's an innate deep need for belonging, a need for tribe.
Yes.
Yeah.
And understanding that that happens within religion, outside of religion, it's just within humans. And I understanding that in me, like, why did I walk down this path? Why did I allow myself in this position? That journey for me has given me more compassion towards others who may be in a tribe that is not aligned with my values, my internal values, you know, but I can see them for, hey, they are looking to belong. And I have a level of compassion there. And in some ways, it has been a bridge for me being able to maintain relationships with people who have very different perspectives that are even harmful at, you know, mainly like the polarized political parties right now is a big deal. So I really am able to see, like, hey, these people are seeking to be a part of something bigger than themselves. And I know that. And I know how you can step into a space and, oh my gosh, it's changing and it's different than what you thought it was, but it's so much harder to step out of it than it was to step in, because you've called these people family. You've used the L word, and by that I mean love. You've prayed for them. You've cried for them. Mm. You've taken food to their house after they've had surgery, you know. And it is hard to walk away from all that. It's difficult. It's traumatic to walk away from all that. Mm. To then, especially for Michelle and I, who had ministries where we had so many volunteers and people that worked under us, and you're always on, and then all of a sudden the silence is so loud. It's so loud that you wonder if any of them are thinking about you. Any of them. And so I think that gives me compassion when I look at people who are in spaces and I'm like, how can, and my first thought still, you know, is like, whoa, how can you be a part of that? And it's like, oh wait, remember where I was.
I totally intellectually understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I also 100% do not have that DNA strand that makes me think ever if other people are thinking about me.
I know you don't. And I love that about you. I wish I possessed that, but I
do understand opposite. What you're saying by that.
I am a recovering people pleaser.
Yep.
Yes.
So, yes. It's
and it's the real, hard part about thing. People pleasing, and I think ministry attracts people pleasers.
Yeah.
Like moths to a flame. Mm-hmm. The hard thing about being a people pleaser is that, at least for me, I'll speak for myself, you desperately want others to serve you as well as you're serving them.
Right.
And they don't.
You are getting something back from it.
Right.
For sure. It is serving you in some way.
Right. But when you're down and you're not able to give out.
That's correct.
You are not being served anymore.
That's
because
correct.
You're only serving by giving in that capacity.
Yeah.
And so when you're actually in a crisis or you're in a state where you can't give, it's empty. There's nothing coming back. And the people, and I'm not saying that there's anything malicious, but the people around you are so used to you giving,
right,
that now they don't even think about giving back to you. You're the one who gives. That's the role you play.
Mm.
Yeah.
I like role-playing games.
I don't like those kind of role-playing games. I like playing the hero in role-playing games.
What's the last question?
Okay. The last question is, how have you developed new freedoms and practices that serve you better as a result of this, as a result of walking away from institutional Christianity? What freedoms, and practices do you now have that serve you better?
Freedoms and practices.
I have a joke answer that's really a real answer.
Okay, tell us. We won't laugh, but we'll pretend.
I'm going to make my own religion.
Michelle, you're not supposed to laugh. I told him we can't because he'll become a cult leader.
Yes.
And he knows it.
I can't share it.
He's very charismatic.
But.
He can have a secret religion. You just can't
share
it.
I
want to
have my own religion.
You need an ebook for that as well.
He's over here. He's got a publishing company now.
I have it written down in my little spiritual book. Let me see where it says it.
Oh, dear.
Where does it say it?
See what I deal with?
Yes. I'm sorry.
He wants to. 10 years after he dies, it'll become a real cult.
Oh, dear.
And you'll be culpable. Your Baptist roots.
Oh, you know what? I did write it down, therefore it didn't work.
Didn't happen.
And here's what I want to do. I was never one for liturgy. Like, yeah. I didn't follow a calendar or a series of events. Or a series of activities to usher me into any kind of thing. There's a part of me that thinks I want to do that, but every time I try to do something, that doesn't work. Whether it's, let me back up.
You're not a planner.
Part of it is I'm not a planner. That's true.
You think of a plan.
No, but I'm saying like
the
prayer.
First line, you're like, nope.
Prayer is something that I always felt like I needed to do for the appearance of others, not for me personally.
Mm. Interesting.
I very rarely personally prayed
in crisis, Because I remember a story about...
I mean, I would pray in crisis, for sure.
But I remember a story of you saying, like, you know, your son was in...
Correct.
...diabetic coma. You were praying so loud, you made the doctors nervous.
That's correct.
Oh, wow.
Again, I kind of prayed for that doctor to get the idea, don't you dare...
God's going to smite you.
Yeah.
Motherfucker.
How terrible is that?
Wow.
Yeah. Gabe was getting a spinal tap when he was young. He almost died. He had
has
MCAD. He had a sugar coma, basically, or whatever it's called.
It's a diabetic coma.
Passed out. I thought he was going to die.
Oh. He had the flu, and he wasn't eating. Why it happened.
And then, so he was out of it. And they normally they put the kid in a, like a what's it called, a papoose.
Yeah, it's kind of like restraints, but
like a little
straight
thing to do the spinal tap. And he was so out of it, just leaned him over, and they just did it. And I was in the room, Lord Jesus, help. I was saying this out loud. Lord Jesus, help the doctor's hand, guide him so he does not paralyze my child from the legs, you know, from the waist down for his legs or from any other, you know, brain damage. You know, as I was saying that out loud, as the doctor's like, shut the hell up.
Shaking.
You
know?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So those moments aside, I didn't have a personal practice of prayer as part of my faith experience. Hmm. I don't know what that... I mean, I did a little. Lindsay and I used to pray at nighttime before bed. I did that for her, not for me. Right? I was never a power of prayer kind of person. That was never a thing for me. Hmm. A lot of my faith has always been centered around what I believe intellectually, not those things of practice. So anyway, I'm long-winded way of answering this question is to say, I do want to find a personal expression of my faith, whatever that looks like. I know it sounds funny when I say I want to make my own religion, but I kind of do. I kind of want to find what is the thing that puts me in a space, in a headspace where I can contemplate the divinity.
Connect.
And connect with the creation and whatever. I don't know what those things are. I have not found them. We have another friend I shared something with one time when we were on vacation together, and they were deeply saddened that I didn't have emotional, spiritual experiences, or very rarely. This person felt like that was a very important thing, but that to me still to this day doesn't feel, and I don't think that was just a way that I could connect to my faith, was not through emotions, not through an emotional experience, you know. Though there are times in which I do have spiritual like experiences that are deeply emotional, they are rarely part of a
controlled environment
from a religious perspective. Yeah. We watched a show, Baby Reindeer. There's moments in it where you're like, that touches at the core of humanity in a way that very few things do.
I'm going to cry. You can't.
You know? Or there's, and for me, it's music. I can hear some music and get to that place.
Yeah.
But it's not, let me recite the Hail Marys and Our Fathers or X, Y, and Z.
I mean, that's for repentance, love.
I know, I got it. I know, I'm with you. But okay. So for me, my answer to the question is, I am glad that I have the freedom to make my own religion.
Okay.
And I will not share it with anyone for fear of creating a
what
cult.
What about me?
What about you?
Will you share it with me? I'm your wife.
Yeah, I guess you can.
Okay.
I
won't be a follower, though.
No, you can't.
I'll be a reviewer. The historian that just writes down.
Oh, okay. Chronicler.
What about you, Joe?
I would say freedom from confines that are dictated by specific organized religion.
Religious cult leaders?
Well, like
I'm looking for followers.
Yeah. He's recruiting.
He's not very good at that.
He's now an evangelical religion.
He's not good at following cult leaders. So
he's the worst follower.
Sorry, I am the worst.
He's not a follower. He's definitely a leader.
Okay. Sorry, I'll be the one that backstabs you in the end. Sorry about that. No, it's like kind of like the walled garden that a lot of tech companies do, like Apple or Google. They try to keep you within the hedges because you get acclimated and you get then kind of tied into their technologies, or you got to come back for more because everyone else happens to be on that same, you know, platform, whether it be an iPhone or Android, or it's
the
same thing.
Are you a green bubble or a blue bubble?
Exactly. The whole green bubble, blue bubble thing. Right?
I know a bubble you are.
I'm a green bubble.
You are a green bubble
right now.
It's an oligopoly.
I might go back to blue bubble. It's an
oligopoly. What? Stop it.
You're coming back to the blue side.
I might go to the blue side.
Yeah,
I might go to the blue side.
You're tired of being green.
He flip-flops.
I do. When it comes to that, I do. But yeah, I feel like I can jump over the hedges, look on the other side, and not worry about that now. Mm. That's the freedom that I feel. Because maybe it was self-imposed that I was putting myself within that walled garden, because that's what I think was expected of me.
You probably had to do it on behalf of Michelle.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Why is it her fault?
Because she's employed.
It's my fault. Yeah, it's all my fault.
Gosh. Yeah, I mean, he couldn't take photos or reels of his
raves
that he was going to.
Let me tell you something. Eve was framed.
I know.
Eve was framed.
What's funny is that where Michelle used to work prior to the mega church, I remember I started then going to the mega church. So I started going there at first.
Yes. I went there because he went there.
Yeah.
Oh, same.
It's your fault.
It's my fault.
I went there because you went there. See, we were framed the whole time, Michelle. I told you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
And then she started working there.
That is true.
And then I then
left.
Well, then I did the Spain thing. I went drastic. Nah, that happened afterwards. But yeah, so that's how it actually happened. Mm-hmm. Now that I think about it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Question is, without taking away what you have experienced, how have you developed new freedoms and practices that serve you better?
I have given myself permission to look at the world differently, but also to do different things. So I've taken up different hobbies, and in that, I'm discovering more about myself and allowing myself to think about, you know, the possibilities, the what ifs, and what will life look like beyond all these years of being in ministry. Because it's one thing to go to be a part of a church, it's another thing to work in ministry.
Yeah.
And so
that's true.
I think unless you've been in that position, you don't understand the dichotomy of that. And giving myself permission to really think beyond that and to allow myself to just, oh, you know, I can do anything. I can be this or do that, or allow myself to think about possibilities that I don't think I ever would have.
To dream.
To dream.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
New dreams for yourself.
I don't think I allowed myself to dream much. And
no, because your path was chosen for you.
Yeah. But I still do think that for me, giving myself permission, whether that will sustain or not, where God fits in that with me. Mm. And so that is a huge piece that I'm kind of navigating. What that looks like.
Yeah.
Because as I was listening to you, Robert, you were saying about prayer, it's quite the opposite for me. If somebody asked me to pray, I would, but it was not my favorite. But my prayer life was sacred, is sacred.
Mm.
So, yeah. Giving myself permission to kind of just seek all of that, whatever that looks like.
I think piggybacking on what you're saying, you and I both know about each other is we love to pray. We call it the red line. And that's a reference.
Telephone line.
That's reference to the presidential line, yes.
Yes.
But it's a red line to God.
God. Got it.
God.
They're different.
There hasn't been a woman president yet, though.
Oh.
So,
yeah, maybe one day.
So, you know, in this, me stepping away from the institution and working there vocationally and doing everything under the sun there, dealing with my emotions, you know, depression and anxiety of not producing enough, just having the space to think through things, I started going to counseling and was officially diagnosed with OCD. And in that process, I came to understand that part of OCD, one of the very common signs is that people with OCD will often pray to alleviate their anxiety. Mm. And for someone who had a really active prayer life, that gutted me because it took away the intimacy of my prayers. And wow. It made me feel like I would, and I do understand the concept of having to, like, I don't want to feed the anxiety by doing the thing that alleviates the anxiety over and over again. So I took a step back from praying for a while, and I really struggled with the concept of, I didn't ask to be here. Like, there's, like, this is scary for me, and now I'm being forced to decide between heaven and hell, and I didn't ask to be born. And, like, this manifested as, like night terrors in my age, you know, as an adult. And I think as I've processed through that, I've begun to start practicing prayer again, but it's different this time. It's not a response to fear and anxiety, which I think is more beautiful, because it is very, in my experience, in all religious organizations that I've been a part of, all churches that I've gone to, it's like, don't be afraid or anxious about anything. Instead, pray. And that's, like, really celebrated and communicated, and people you tell people that all the time. Don't be afraid. Let's just pray. And it's literally a faithful practice that I've seen across all Christian religions. So for me to take a step back from that, I felt very isolated from God. And my prayers are different now. It's not under the same construct of religious prayers. Sometimes I'm thinking about God. Sometimes I'm thinking about the loved ones that I've lost. Sometimes I'm thinking about nature. I really connect with nature. And prayers have become more about discovery, more about seeking, than it is about abating anxieties for me. So, you know, when I'm trying to connect with something, I would say it's more akin to, like, a focus meditation. So you're focusing on one thing or another. But it's not just scripture anymore, although that is still there for me. I still do pray to God, but now it's broader than that. I don't just have that as a confine. You know, when I am missing my loved ones, I have a conversation with them, and I'm like, maybe they can hear me. I don't know, you know. But for me, that was a big transition. It was a big change, because as effective as my prayers have been in my life, I don't want to feed anything that's not serving me well. So it's been a shift.
That is a, you said that effortlessly, or it seemed like it?
I was trying not to cry the whole time.
I can see that you're trying not to cry, but I'm saying,
I was trying not to cry the whole time.
It's heavy.
You said
I'm
that
sorry.
Really clearly too. Like, I totally understood what you were saying. Thank you for saying. Saying that out loud.
Yeah.
Because we stumbled across that nugget of information together, and
about OCD.
Yeah, and I have dermatillomania. You know, I obsessively skin pick scabs it's a branch of OCD. Mm-hmm. And
but it is a separate diagnosis than OCD. Right.
It's its own thing. It's special.
You are special.
A little special. But I will say that, you know, when we found that information about, I literally thought to myself, is my belief in God a result of OCD tendencies and just rumination? Because there are times that I can totally get lost in the idea of thinking about God all the time, incessantly, to the point where I feel like I'm trapped by some of those thoughts because I can't let go of them. And it can be very difficult for me to not think about God sometimes.
And I don't, I mean, OCD's in Hollywood been kind of kitschy. Mm-hmm. And it's not well understood. And I think if you don't have a diagnosis or know someone who does, maybe you don't understand. It's not just, oh, I have to straighten the couch right. cushions. You know, there's some real negative effects that come along with that. So when you're talking about getting trapped, thinking about things, you're saying you're not able to concentrate on other things that you need to concentrate on because it's pulling you away. It's a pull.
Right.
It's not like you're focusing. It's actually pulling you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think my prayer life has always been a place of comfort for me. You know, I have some abuse and childhood trauma in my past, and prayer was the one thing that I had to myself that I could control, that I could be safe in, that I could always rely on. And I get it. It is a devastating thought to think like, hey, was that any of that real?
Right.
Or was it just a manifestation of this, right. you know, an illness, if
right.
you will.
Right.
But I have come back to say that I do think that there is divine, and I do think that there is power in prayer and intention and what you put your mind on and what mm-hmm. you think about. I do think that that matters.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just thinking about all those things you were saying, and yeah, well, I'm going to try to keep it together. It makes me sad to hear that struggle within you, but I do understand completely. And I started to think about, okay, was a lot of my prayers probably were about anxiety and fear, and
yeah.
growing up in, you know, Southern Baptist, like, it's a lot of guilt, it's a lot mm-hmm. of fear. And sometimes when you don't take that step back and evaluate that it's, yeah. Moving to Spain, I think, was a huge piece. I know we joke around saying kind of we're running away, but really it was a huge healing piece for me to be able to, like, say I'm going to do something super scary that 95% of the people in my life thought I was completely and utterly crazy. Mm-hmm. I had people reaching out to me asking me, are you okay? And it's still the best decision that we made. Mm. Because I look at my relationship with God now in the way that I pray, and it is different.
Yeah.
And you've made me kind of realize that in hearing you speak, because there probably was fear and anxiety that were coming from a lot of from initially, but not anymore.
Yeah.
Because I did something really hard, really fucking hard.
You made it.
And, I mean, selling our house, leaving our daughter here, you know, she's biggie girl, but
it's a big
leaving
deal.
Your family and your friends deal. And just saying, okay, we're going to go on this adventure. And it's, you know, I think a lot of young adults do that, you know, in
sure.
their 20s, and they're going to go out and, you know, see
You're
the
not
world.
In your 20s?
25.
But when you're older and you've had this established life and community, and then you're like, we're going to do something different, that scares a lot of people. And it was scary for us.
It was liberating yet scary.
Yeah.
Talk about weightlessness, right?
Hey.
We had no weight on us.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for sharing, because that it really did hit me in a place that said, oh, yeah, maybe I was coming, my prayers were coming from that place, but, you know, not anymore.
What a beautiful place, not anymore, right?
Not anymore.
Because they're different now.
Yeah.
They're more intimate.
It's just me.
It's just you.
It's just me.
Wow. I'm sorry to bring it down. This is my specialty.
No.
Let's shut this shit down.
Wait. This is my specialty. Everyone's like so positive, and I just got to bring it right back down to the dirt.
No, it's good. It's fun.
Grounded.
It's grounded. Fun. It's fun. It's grounded. Fun. Well, you got to have the highs and lows, man.
Thanks for sharing your journey and talking about it with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Hopefully other people can relate to one of our stories or all of our stories, pieces of them.
Or not.
Or not. Maybe they have their own.
That's good, too.
It makes them think about, hey, what's
my
story?
Maybe if they have their own and they don't, they could share it online in our community forums.
Oh, okay.
At connect.thewaitlist.space.
Perfect.
That's a great plug.
Yes. It's a good plug.
Very effortless there.
Yeah, that's... Well, here's to healing.
Here's to healing.
Yeah.
Cheers.
I feel like we should do 1, 2, 3, heal. Okay, ready?
1, 2.
No, we gotta
go in. Okay. Wait. I gotta get this on.
No, I don't want a video. Come on, you're making it weird.
Video.
We're done.
No.
All right, friends. Till next time.
Part
take
of
care.
Supplemental materials.
1, 2, 3.
Heal. So done.